Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bone-crunching hits, backboard-shattering dunks, backflips, and hat tricks on the Sports Leader, AM 950 and 95.7 FM, ESPN Rochester.
Here in the sports bar, we only talk to the best and the brightest, and that is why Jeremy White from WGR, our sister station in Buffalo, joins us right now. How are you this afternoon, Jeremy?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
Great. If Doug Whaley's press conference at the end of the season was an F, what grade would you give Tim Murray just now?
I wouldn't say it was anything inept. The timing is a little bit puzzling. Why do you do this if you, I think, don't know what you're going to do about your coach, or you do know, but you're not ready to say it? So that's a little bit interesting, but, you know, in the interest of transparency and all that, I think as consumers, we should kind of appreciate it. I appreciate it. I'd like to hear him talk, you know, once a week, and for him to be as open and honest as he was about a lot of things today. Yeah, I'd say it was all right. I came away with a couple of impressions that were, you know, I'm excited to talk about. That's for sure. I guess my number one impression is, after all that, I can't believe they still have a coach, but they do.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard you as kind of a vocal opponent of Bielsma. Why? Why do they still have him? I mean, everything that you see with this team kind of points in the direction of the coach not doing his job or effectively doing his job. Jeremy, I mean, expound on that a little bit.
Well, there's a lot of different things a coach has to do, right? I mean, I'm not a professional hockey player, and I'm not a professional hockey coach. But if you've lost your entire room, and from every corner of the room, the players feel a disconnect. I mean, maybe that's a term that I use, disconnect. Then I think you have a problem with the guy who they're all disconnected from. And Tim Murray gave a great answer on that. I mean, as open or as transparent an answer as you'll ever give. He talked about how the coaches work hard, but maybe they should spend a little less time in the video room and a little more time grabbing a cup of coffee, going outside and talking and getting to know their players. Like, what? Mind blow there. It's 2 years in, and the GM thinks the coach should spend more time relating to the players. So, I mean, if you're a staunch opponent of firing the coach because of young kids that don't really identify him or don't really like him, you know, think about who you play for, who you work for. If your boss spends 5 minutes getting to know you, if you feel like he's invested in you, you know, maybe you feel a little better. Say what you will about Sean McDermott and whether or not he's going to be successful, but all the guys that come in to the Bills are saying, this guy, I feel like we're family. His first question to me was, how's your wife? How's your kids? Like, Sean McDermott's making sure that these players he has feel like he cares about them. And the contrary to that would be Dan Bielsma, where it appears that, I guess, the Sabres players don't feel like he gives a flip about him. He just wants to coach the system. And Murray also seemed to kind of think that maybe the system's not great or not well-fitting to the team. And there was so much in there about how the players have, his words, legitimate gripes about the coach. I just, it all leads to, okay, so just fire him? I mean, you know, firing coaches in hockey is like changing your shirt. Like, it's easy to do. Everybody does it. 13 teams have done it in the last 12 months. So why haven't the Sabres done it yet?
Well, is it a question of timing, though? Because let's say, and I hear you, there are reasons to let go of Dan Bielsma now. But whoever it is, you bring in Coach X, and then here we are in mid-December, and there are the Sabres still at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Is this a card in the deck there that, in the end, Tim Murray is saving? Because if we get to mid-November and nothing's really changed, that would be the expected move.
I don't think so, because the problem with that is if he makes the move too late and they miss the playoffs again, the coach might stay and the GM might go. That's the real peril here for Murray, is throwing away another season. Or, you know, the bigger issue is you can get fired when you do make the playoffs. Look at, and even if you did win cups, you know, Calgary fired their coach. They made the playoffs. Boston fired their coach, Montreal. You know, these teams made the playoffs. And GMs get fired too. So, I mean, Murray, you would think, wants to win the Stanley Cup, right? He wants to lead this team to the Stanley Cup. So the question he's really got to ask himself is, all right, how does Dan Bylsma fit my group of players and my most important players? Sure, I can get him three really good defensemen, and maybe we start to win some more games. But is the problem that he has with them and they have with him one that is going to remain? My opinion is, not Tim Murray, this is me, yeah, this is a problem now. It's probably always going to be a problem. So I'm not looking at it any differently than I would any sort of group or team or sport. If there's a guy in there that makes people hate going to work, get him out of there. Get somebody in there that they like going to work for. Dan Bylsma might have a decent system for a different group and for a more veteran team. But I'm kind of stunned that 2 years in, the GM says the coach needs to get to know the players. That's part of the job, is knowing how to coach individuals. You know, you got a lot of different personalities. You've got to find a way to reach each guy maybe a little bit differently. I think about, like, sorry to ramble here, but I think about Doug Marrone in this way. Like, when Doug Marrone stood up to Jerry Hughes, for me, I was like, you're done. You know, you think you're going to win a battle against Jerry Hughes, you're going to lose that battle. And sure enough, you know, Marrone quit. But and who does ownership side with there? And if Dan Bylsma is going to get in a battle with Jack Eichel or Ryan O'Reilly or, you know, pick a name, like, coaches lose those battles. So what I need is a coach that tries to avoid those battles and is always trying to be, even if you're mean but motivating in the right way, like, a player needs to know, a player needs to feel like, even if you're being hard on me, I know you're doing it because it's going to get the best out of me. And I don't think the Sabres players feel that way about Dan Bylsma.
It's interesting, though. I mean, you hear a lot of coaches in the NHL who don't have players who, quote, like them. I mean, you know, Babcock in Toronto would be the one on the top of the list. Like, they like winning, but they don't like him. Does it matter? Do we put too much of a value on whether or not players actually like their head coach? And the flip side of that coin is that we've seen, you know, plenty of instances, even recently, where you change the atmosphere, you get rid of the coach, and you bring in somebody new, and it propels you to a playoff berth, and almost did for the Islanders with Doug Weight, and it did with St. Louis, and as they got rid of Ken Hitchcock in the middle of the season.
Well, right. I mean, sometimes players don't like a guy because they don't like a personality. Other times they don't like him because they think what we're doing is wrong and he's bullheaded on it and he won't take our feedback, right? So you might not like his personality. Maybe you hate Mike Babcock because he's a real son of a gun and he's kind of gruff. But if you are Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner or Nazem Kadri, whoever you might be, if you think, I mean, he's a real jerk, but man, this guy can coach a system. Man, this guy's put me in position to have a great year. Then you can kind of get over that. Like, we've all had bosses we work for, but if they make the right decisions, you deal with that. You know, so I think when if anyone says that the Sabres don't like the coach, I think a lot of that comes down to the way they practice, the way he treats them. I mean, the story about that Murray says we're 3 hours in the video room, he'd like him to get an hour out with the players. I can't know this for sure, but that kind of paints a picture where the coaches and the players don't really have any interaction that is positive / team building stuff, you know?
Meaningful.
Like, imagine if the only interactions you ever had with your boss were when he comes in for 5 minutes, shouts at you to what to do, and then leaves. And, like, you don't ever have I'm sure there are people that do have that relationship with their bosses. You know, to have someone who you feel he's got your back and maybe you got his a little bit would be probably better. So I'm very much in favor of firing the coach, especially if the star player thinks we can do better, then the star player might be right. And if, you know, Jack Eichel or whoever is going to be the leadership group of this team thinks a different type of coach is right, then I think you have to do that.
Reading the tea leaves here, Jeremy White, co-host of Howard and Jeremy. You hear him on WGR, our guest here in the Sports Bar, 95.7 ESPN, where the question came up about the captaincy. And we talked to Paul Hamilton yesterday. And as you know, Paul talked to Brian Gionta. Gionta's fine if it ends up not being him. This has to be Jack Eichel's team. This has to be him as the captain next year, does it not?
I'm not positive about that. But Murray had an interesting answer. You know, this is one of those ones where there's a two-part question, and he answers it with one answer, and I'm not sure which he meant. He is interested in getting Brian Gionta back this year. And when asked about the captain in the same question, like, do you want him back in a captain role? Yes, I'd be interested in him back. And, you know, as far as leadership, he's a good leader. But that decision is going to go through me, directly or indirectly. I mean, is he already saying, that, sure, Gionta can come back, but I get to pick who's captain. Does that mean he hands it to Jack because he picks? And is that I heard that and thought, is that another indicator that maybe the coach says, no, it's not going to be the 21-year-old kid. It's going to be the 38-year-old veteran. You know, like, times change. These teams that are in the playoffs, they got a lot of young guys. There's plenty of teams chock full of young guys. So, you know, before you blame Sabres youth, other teams with veterans get coaches fired. You know, Boston's got veterans. They got their coach fired. It's all just hockey players. And like with Murray on that topic about Gionta, that it's going to be my call directly or indirectly, if he meant about the leadership, that could be another indication of yet another fracture he has with the coach, and that the leadership is going to be his call. Like, well, I'm going to decide who is in charge of this team in that room.
Which is crazy when you think that, you know, Brian Gionta is the kind of leader that understands, hey, look, I can still be a leader on this team without wearing the C on my sweater. What's the holdup? Why not just hand the reins over to Eichel, who's clearly the best player on the team, the has become vocal and has said a lot of, you know, leadership kind of things in post-game press conferences. I think a lot of the youth on this team would rally around, wouldn't they?
Maybe. That's the one thing I don't really know. In terms of Eichel's personality, I've heard plenty of things about him. You know, whether he's headstrong or selfish or entitled, you know, it depends on the messenger every time. Chances are, if you're, I mean, we know how it goes. If you are an older player that's had to work for every single scrap you've ever had in the league, and a guy shows up and you want to hand him the C, you might resent that. You know, a guy shows up on an entry level contract, has all these bonuses. He's supposed to be the star of the team. You know, some guys get in line and say, that's our meal ticket. Other guys would say, you know, easy kid. You know, you're still new in this league. You've got to prove it. You've got to earn it. So different sports do it different ways. Think about every time a rookie comes up with the Sabres. Nylander's another one. What number did he wear? He wore number 70. He's got to earn his real number. Eichel in the preseason wore number 41. He wanted to earn his number 15. Like, there's a lot of, you got to earn what you get. So it depends on the veterans in that room. Maybe there are some that would resent that Jack would be just given the C. I mean, I would think he would earn it. And if his message at the postseason press conference, where he said, you got to want to win, not just be happy to be in the NHL. I mean, as long as he's walking the walk in the locker room, in the off season, and every other walk of life, then if he's talking that talk, yeah, that's the captain. The only thing that would stop that from happening is if he talks that talk, but in the room, everybody knows that he's not as committed as he talks like he is. So I don't really know that totally, but it seems like it would make sense. If you gave him the C, I don't think anyone would blink at it too much.
Jeremy White, our guest here in the Sports Bar on 95.7 ESPN. You can read his work as well as WGR550.com. So Dallas today brings back Ken Hitchcock. They brought back the guy from their glory years. What's been the talk on your show in regards to Lindy Ruff? Because I've seen Sabre fans online saying, you know, pining for the good old days of Lindy Ruff. Where do you think Ruff ends up?
I don't know where Lindy Ruff ends up. I don't think it's with the Sabres. They might be looking for David Quinn, who is Jack Eichel's college coach, and is getting sniffs from not just the Sabres. It's one of those things where if the Sabres hire him, you know, you'll have people saying, oh, they're just, you know, bending over for Eichel and kowtowing to Eichel. But if another team hires him, it'll be, oh, I guess he's qualified. Like, he interviewed for the Sharks job before Peter DeBoer got it. David Quinn did. He's been an assistant in the NHL and in the AHL. So I think that's a real possibility. Elliot Friedman mentioned him today, that people around the league are kind of waiting to see what happens with Buffalo and David Quinn, if that is really a fit. On Lindy, I mean, here's the thing about Ken Hitchcock going back to Dallas. How many players from Dallas are on that roster that were there the last time he was there? The answer is zero. So he's basically coaching a different team. They just happen to play in the same city. So I know that it's returning to Dallas. It's a different GM. They probably have different uniforms for that matter. They have different players. It might as well be just another landing spot in the NHL that happens to be Dallas. And if Lindy Ruff were to come back to Buffalo, it would be, I believe, only Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno. And I'm not sure if either one of those guys would even be on the team next year. You never know. I mean, Foligno's under contract. Ennis is too. I don't think we've talked about it too much. I don't think we will. But Lindy, he'll land somewhere. I mean, he's well-regarded around the league. You know, these guys get jobs. How many jobs has Ken Hitchcock had? Like seven? You know,
right.
Columbus, Philly, St. Louis. He's going to retire, and then he's back in Dallas. And Randy Carlyle goes from Anaheim to Toronto, back to Anaheim again. And Carlisle, who won the cup in Anaheim, has been in first place in their division. So, you know, it all depends on the dynamic between players and coach. And it's easy to fire coaches, which is, you know, kind of brings you back to today's press conference. Your dynamic is not right, you know. So just fire the guy. Hire somebody else. You can go somewhere else, and if he gets a good dynamic, then great. Good for him.
Jeremy White, co-host of Howard and Jeremy every morning on our sister station WGR in Buffalo, joining us in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. Jeremy, let's talk a little Bills football. You had your first impression this morning of head coach Sean McDermott. He was on with you guys. What do you think about the coach?
You know, he's I had talked to a couple of friends about this. In talking to him, he came across like a friend of mine that I have that is a pastor or a person that is very, very focused on the message that they deliver, seemingly everything positive. I mean, if you know anybody like this, they have such strong belief in their own ability, in finding good people, surrounding themselves with good people. And I have a pastor friend who, when you talk to him, you know, you just get the sense like, you really got it together. And on some level, the rest of us that don't always think positive all the time are like, so what's wrong with him? You know, there's got to be something there. And not to say there's anything wrong with Sean McDermott. You know, he came across well. I liked him. He, before the interview and after the interview, kind of stuck around with us and talked for a few minutes. And, you know, just got an idea that he's the kind of guy that will do exactly what we're talking about Dan Bylsma needing to do. Like, he strikes me as a guy who will know his players, who will know their families, who will know the kids' names, who will, you know, if a guy's had a tough game, it won't be about throwing him in a locker and screaming. It'll be about, like, you know, putting his arm around him and, like, bringing him back in. Like, you're a part of a team here. You're part of us. Let us help lift you back up. Team dynamics and stuff like that. He strikes me as a guy that was kind of, and I don't know if he'll be successful, but been wanting to do this and preparing to do this for his entire life. He seems out of central casting. That's something Howard has said. He seems made to do this. Now, whether or not he's made to succeed in doing it, I don't know yet. And that'll come down to a lot of decisions on Sundays and, you know, Monday through Saturday. But I think it's really tough not to come away with a good impression of him.
We're all in the honeymoon phase here, right? Because when Rex Ryan came in, and we all knew the track record of Rex Ryan in New York and talking to people down there and Jet fans, hey, you're not going to like his clock management. Hey, he's sloppy on detail. You knew his weaknesses. Do we have any idea what the weakness is here? We're all in love with this new head coach, but really we don't know anything at this point.
We don't, but I'm going to forget the exact quote. He said something along the lines of prepare for your weaknesses, or, you know, the idea being that if you've got something that you're not good at, you should really attack it. You know,
he hired for his weaknesses, right? So if he doesn't have, you know, he hired a lot of people that might mask any of his weaknesses. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. A good competent staff. You know, when I mentioned to him, you're going to have to win people over on Saturday, on Sundays, with the challenge flag and fourth downs. And like, why did you review that play? Like, these communications, these things will matter to fans more than anything, because this is going to be their impression of you. And I got to say, like, I just liked his answers on most stuff. He seemed like a really good guy. It would have been the kind of interview where you're not glad that it's over. You wanted another hour or two. So it really kind of get to know him and see what kind of questions he might want to ask of Buffalo. You know, just everything about him. With Rex, as soon as the introductory press conference or every one of them was over, you could debate with friends, what do you think? Is this guy phony or what? And with McDermott, again, I don't know if he's good, but I don't think anybody's going to say he's a phony.
Right. I think right now, and Gene's right, I mean, we're in a little bit of a honeymoon period, but he is saying all the right things, and it's hard not to like what he's putting out there. I just hope we can all remember how this feels in April if this team is struggling in December. And there was a quote, Jeremy, I got to give you a hard time here for a little bit. As I was scanning through Pro Football Talk, he mentioned something about the visits to the quarterbacks being a smokescreen, and Pro Football Talk quoted the top 40 station in your cluster.
Come on, Jeremy.
I mean, they weren't good enough to quote anything that he said during your guys' interview. And I was kind of wondering if somebody at Pro Football Talk maybe is a fan of Bruno Mars. I don't know. But what insight did he give you guys in terms of, you know, what they're looking at in the draft? You know, do you get the sense that all of this quarterback talk, which I think is great for them heading into the draft, is it all a smokescreen? I mean, do they really have an idea of what they're going to do with that number 10 pick?
Well, he said in their first three picks, they want guys who can come in and contribute. But, you know, in theory, a quarterback wouldn't do that. He did say, if that's a quarterback that has to sit for a year, then so be it. And Howard asked, how do you balance the long-term versus the short-term? And that's kind of what got him to that answer, and that's what that ties into is, you know, we're drafting for players that are going to make an impact, and if that means a guy sits for a year, well, then that's what's going to happen. So I do not think the quarterback stuff is a smokescreen. Not anymore. You know, you I know you could take the owner down on one of the trips as part of the smokescreen, but in a business where you're trying to do everything you can to prepare, they would be spending an awful lot of money to convince the league that they might take a quarterback in order to not take one. And, like, really, what would that accomplish? You're trying to get somebody to trade up with you to take a guy. And in reality, if you're trying to convince the league you're going to take a quarterback, all you're really accomplishing is teams would trade in front of you and push a player down to you. Like, it just seems like a lot of work. So I think they are on the quarterback. I think they're doing all their work on it. And I don't know about 10, maybe if their guy's there at 10, they think they can move to 14, they'll try. But I don't think it's a smokescreen. I kind of came to that today. It's almost too much work to be such an elaborate smokescreen. All you have to do to send a smokescreen is leak it to Pro Football Talk and leak it to Walter Football, or maybe not them so much, but have Todd McShay and Mel Kiper say it every single day. Making the trips, you know, bringing all the guys in or going to see them. If I wanted to a smokescreen, I could do it a lot cheaper, and I could spend a lot less time on it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Should Bills fans be concerned if Terry Pegula is going out and meeting these quarterbacks? That I'm going on the premise that at number 10, you don't want to take a quarterback. That would be too soon. But Terry Pegula, where he says this is a group decision, he's got the power to make the executive decision. Should Bills fans be worried that Terry Pegula might fall in love with one of these guys and say, you know what, I want him? Is that a fear?
Might be for some. It's not for me. I tend to think that picking a quarterback is a lot of luck. You know, Dak Prescott goes to the Cowboys. They wanted three other guys before him. So, and Jerry Jones loved Johnny Manziel and then got talked out of it. He didn't take Manziel, so... You know, the Cowboys are sitting pretty because the owner got talked out of one guy and then they missed on three others they wanted and they got their fourth choice. And the Bills wanted Dak Prescott but waited too long and ended up with Cardale Jones. I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, I would understand if others did. It's just a matter of your school of thought. I don't really care. I don't have a problem. I think that the Pegulas really want to present themselves as not meddlesome. And I don't understand why, and I respect that. And they also want to have a hand in running their team and owning their team because, I mean, they own it. And I don't have a problem with that. So, to me, it's a bit of a dance that any owner wants, any owner has to do. You know, you've got Al Davis on one side, you got Dan Snyder over on that side, Jerry Jones on the other. And I'm sure you have plenty that are active but don't want to seem active. And I think that's what you got with the Bills here. You know, making a call on your coach, making a call on your quarterback, on what you think of the guy, of his work ethic. What'd you pick up in that interview? What'd you pick up at that dinner from him as his attitude? I don't have a problem with it at all. But I don't understand if people did.
Jeremy, we I know this was addressed at the owners' meetings, and he was point blank asked. I mean, on draft night, who makes the final call on what you guys are going to do? And Mr. Pegula's answer was it's going to be a group decision. I mean, are we really to believe that it is truly a group decision, or is it a matter of who can present the better case to Terry Pegula on draft night as to which direction this team should go?
That's a good question. Let me ask you back. If it is down to Pegula wants them to take a quarterback for the future at some point, but let's not just say it's first round, first or second round, and Terry Pegula says, I really want you to get me a quarterback because I think one of these guys has a good chance to make it. And Sean McDermott says, but I want to take a defensive back. I mean, what would you want to do? I mean, McDermott is out for, not to say he's selfish, but himself, and wins and losses as soon as possible. Sean McDermott would be better served to win 9 games than 5 games. But, you know, for the Bills long term, Pegula is going to have the team a lot longer than McDermott. He's going to look a lot longer term. So if my owner is saying, I know you want that defensive back, but I'm going to need more long-term thinking here, I would have respect for that. I think that's one of the things the Sabres did well with the tank. you know, it was long-term thinking that got them Jack Eichel. Without that, with a GM that was just fresh on the job and told, you got to make the playoffs because we're in such a drought, it makes us sick. I mean, the Sabres might have made a playoff appearance, and maybe that would have satisfied you short-term, but you wouldn't have the building block that you currently have for the long-term. So if an owner wants to think long-term, that makes sense to me. If you are a GM or a coach that is safe and you can do that, well, then you're in a good spot to me. And the Bills, I mean, we're talking about the rosy feeling that McDermott gives us. I don't think they're going to win more than six games next year.
Well, I think you're being generous.
Yeah, look at those quarterbacks you got to face.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's tough go. And right, I think their over under will be seven, and I might take the under. You know, it's going to be a tough year. So, if you're the owner, what would be the harm in taking a quarterback in the second round this year, and then if you go 5-11, you take one in the first round next year, and like you really commit to something that the Bills have never done. The Jets have done this, and it hasn't worked, but that doesn't mean it's a bad idea. Like, keep picking them. Keep trying, because you've been in a division where one guy has won it all the time. When he goes away, who's going to be ready? You know, who's going to have a guy when he's gone? And if they want to take a quarterback every year, I'm sure it will be laughed at right up until they have a guy, and then it'll have been worth it.
Jeremy White, he is the co-host. You can hear him on a sister station, WGR in Buffalo. Great insight. We appreciate it, Jeremy. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it, Jeremy White. Thanks for joining us. The Bills Inside Scoop, provided exclusively by Perry's Ice Cream. Life is a bowl of Perry's. And if you missed any of that conversation, we'll get it up for you online on demand at the all-new ESPNRochester.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.